Spring is here, and you can now get almost anything you need for your sunny days delivered with Uber Eats. What do we mean by almost? Well, you can't get a well-groomed lawn delivered, but you can get a chicken parmesan delivered. A cabana? That's a no. But a banana? That's a yes. A nice tan? Sorry. Nope. But a box fan? Happily yes. A day of sunshine? No. A box of fine wines? Yes. Uber Eats can definitely get you that. Get almost anything delivered with Uber Eats. Order now. Alcohol in select markets. Product availability may vary by region. See app for details.
DirecTV Stream has the most local MLB games, which means it's never been easier to
root for the home team.
So whether you're rooting for a aura,
safe,
or even a
strike three,
or a
it's out of here,
root for your home team with DirecTV Stream, the most MLB games, period. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Exclusively on Paramount Plus. Get ready.
Vamanos!
To explore like never before.
Swiper, no swiping!
Oh, man!
Swing into action.
We need your help.
Woohoo!
Yay!
With a girl who put adventure on the map.
I don't think I can do it, Dora.
I'll protect you, Boots. Together, we got this.
Todos juntos!
Dora, the brand new series. Stream with your family now, exclusively on Paramount Plus.
Hi, I'm Rob Vasto, and I'm here with my worthy constituent, Dr. Murray McCormick, and we are here for a wrap-up edition of the Rider Rumblings podcast. Not all of these rumblings will be Rider-related, because we'll be talking a bit about the Grey Cup, Sunday's victory by the Winnipeg Blue Bombers over the Hamilton Tiger Cats. There's a lot to sum up Rough Rider-wise, too. Jeremy O'Day, the Rough Riders general manager and vice president of football operations, met with the media on Tuesday. Murray had a nice chat with Rough Rider President CEO Craig Reynolds about the revenue sharing concept that, without a lot of specificity, Commissioner Randy Ambrosi referenced in his State of the League media conference on Friday in Hamilton. So we got a few things to chew on before we take a little bit of a pause, I would anticipate, until there's newsier things going on with the Rough Riders. Let's start off with the revenue sharing thing, because you've got you did have this conversation with Craig Reynolds, who I think provided more insights on this than did Randy Ambrosi. And a lot of alarm bells have been raised, especially with pertinence to the Rough Riders, in that I think the premise of a lot of those objections or concerns was, do you want community-owned teams such as the Rough Riders funneling money toward large corporations, well-heeled corporations such as MLSE or billionaire owners? And that there's a kind of a visceral uncomfortability with that. But it doesn't seem, from what you said to me a little earlier today, that that's necessarily the tenor of this concept.
I think I can safely say Rider fans don't have to panic about gate revenue, sponsorships, and merchandise sales and things that teams generate on their own going to support the Argos as well. The Argos, the Lions, the Alouettes, let's say, all these teams that are struggling. It's more of a national revenue sharing of money that is generated through the TV contract, the national sponsorships, this genius thing, whatever it is.
Whatever that is,
and that's kind of stuff. So it's not as dire as we thought it was. We thought that the Rough were going to be spending money to keep the Argos, and the Argos can take, let's say, $400,000 from the Riders and slap it on a quarterback. They can't do that. It has to go to things that are directed towards football things like sponsorship. So it's, and another thing too, the Riders just aren't going to pour money east. It's capped at how much money they can use, and there's accountability. And that's, so there's, I was kind of like you. I thought, oh, revenue sharing. My joke was, it's a two word thing, but it's a four letter word out west. And I really thought it was really something that was being a big mistake and made, but it just sounds like more accountability. Teams need money. Let's say the teams have to dip into it to get things that money is there and that revenue is there to be shared and to be used. That's more of a, so it's not really
sort of like an emergency fund. That's
kind of like that. Both. Yeah. It's there to be used. And let's say you know, the, not saying the Riders would ever need it, but they may need it someday. So it's more of a formal thing. And it's just part of the business plan that's been generated out of COVID and stuff. So I guess I didn't think Randy did a great job of explaining it. I thought there were a few details.
You think?
I tried to read, but Craig did a job as funny. I'm paraphrasing, but it's capped, which makes me feel a whole lot more comfortable. That's just not free money flowing. I don't know what the percentage of revenue sharing is or what the cap is, because that's not how the CFL does business. But it kind of makes me feel a little optimistic about the future of the league, that now they're recognizing that the teams just don't have to survive on their own, that the league's got to step in and maybe help out with some of this money, because if that makes sense. And it's funny because people are all upset about this, but it was 40 years ago. Like, I know revenue sharing was pretty darn important to the Riders back then.
Yeah, it was called gate equalization back then. Yeah,
so you get, you know, Toronto was having big crowds. BC was having big crowds. Montreal, I think, was having big crowds.
In the early years of Olympic Stadium, they were getting massive crowds.
So they had the money to support the Riders. Now, I talked to Tom Shepard, who was just sort of starting what seemed like to be his 100-year run with the Rough Riders. And I said, ask me, how was that first Grey Cup? And he told me, I haven't been alive that long, Murray. But anyway, Tom says that money was significant, but it wasn't the be-all and end-all. It kind of helped them get through, but they still made it through the season. And it was just, so I kind of thought, Saskatchewan's dipped into this gate equalization revenue fund before, and I think maybe you should be a little more aware of what it means to Saskatchewan. And we forget, it's not the Saskatchewan Rough Rider League, it's the Canadian Football League. And these teams, you just have to support them, because you can't play four teams that are surviving, let's say Winnipeg, Edmonton, Calgary, and Hamilton. Can't play each other all the time. You got to have 9 teams. So if they're going to survive and move on, I think it's a reasonable thing to do. And I don't think it's as people are complaining, panicking, seem to be panicking about as much as that. But I also want to say, but never say never in the CFL, though, Rob.
What do you think of this whole talk about 3 downs versus 4?
I think, and I'll also go back to Craig on this. He talked about that, the fact that it's, every year they look at the CFL and see what they can do differently. Normal business practices. So they're looking at the 3 downs versus 4. I didn't get the sense it's really going to happen. It's just something they're looking at.
Better maybe not. Make the,
no, and I think there's a lot of people that are quite upset about that. But I think it was just, what can they do to make the game? Because you and I both know, until the playoffs, the games weren't all that exciting. And I don't know if 4 downs changes that by any stretch for the imagination. I love the 3 downs. I love what it has to do. I like to have the pressure on first down when you've got to move the ball. You've got to do something. You can't just hand off to the guy and get 2 yards and stuff. So I don't think, it's just, they're looking at the model. They're seeing which way they can do, maybe attract younger fans. I don't think.
But if you do so, is it at the expense of your traditional base? You know,
yeah.
if you alienate the demographic that is basically you and I, people in our age group, in order to gain younger fans, well, that's nice, but you've also lost or disappointed some people who have been in your corner throughout. And sometimes I wonder if the older demographic, and granted, I'm part of that, so maybe that skews my judgment or my perception here, but they're so eager to attract a younger demographic. Are they taking their existing fan base, which is still substantial, for granted? And if you're trying to appease the 20-year-olds, the 30-year-olds, the 16-year-olds, but if you alienate the 55-year-olds, are you any further ahead? I don't know.
I think the 4 down, where you can't see my hand, this might be the rest. The 4 downs is just a thought, something in the air, something. And I think the timing of it during the Grey Cup was unusual. I think they could have floated that after the Grey Cup and kept the focus on the Grey Cup, but they have to report on something. So I think it's like, it's not top of the mind right now. It's just something they're looking at, among other, I'm assuming, other rule changes that'll maybe liven up the game. Like, maybe what rule changes could they make to their game, Rob, that would liven it up, which would do
something? I have a theory. The 3 downs is working to the league's detriment in this manner. Defensive coordinators can look at this and basically, if this is all predicated on being able to do what the Calgary Stampeders did, which is get a good push with 4 pass rushers. The Rough Riders were also pretty good at that this year. A lot of teams were, Winnipeg, for example. If you can only have to send 4 pass rushers, you can put eight guys back into coverage. You can play a zone, and good luck trying to go over the top or having a consistent vertical passing attack with so many players back in coverage. So then all that is left to the offenses is running plays or short ball control passes. The Jason Moss offense, basically.
Yeah.
And the defensive coordinators are basically playing the percentages and saying, okay, if you want to, if you can move the ball 80 yards in 13 plays and get a touchdown, good luck to you. But I am betting that on, at least, especially on first down, at least one running play isn't going to be that successful. At some point in that drive, there's going to be an incompletion. And if either of those happens, you end up punting. And that's where the, where basically the two downs of offense works in favor of the defensive coordinators, as opposed to once upon a time, it was, well, we've only got three downs. We can't have a run attack. We've got to throw. But now the nature of the passing game has changed so much that it's not a bombs away, let's fire the ball all over the field offense. It's a ball control, you know, pick away at the defense model. And so that's where the game is being hampered. And that's where the excitement, that's why the excitement is waning. So here is my solution. As it stands, the ratio requires that at least seven Canadians start. Doesn't have anything to do with how many are on the field at one time. So defenses, head coaches, generally put more of their Americans on defense than on offense. So you've got an imbalance that automatically favors the defense in those situations. And so that I think that works against mismatches. That almost plays into the defense's hands. You've also got situations where offensive lines are based upon continuity and timing and everything. So their personnel, ideally, except in the case of injuries, is not going to change. You want the same five offensive linemen. Now look at Craig Dickinson. Look at Jason Shivers and how interchangeable many of their defensive linemen are. Most of them are American. So you've got fresh American defensive linemen exerting pressure on Canadian offensive linemen who I think are more subject to fatigue because they aren't interchangeable. They can't be interchangeable or there's chaos. So here's my solution. Require that the same amount of Canadians, that there's to be a certain amount of Canadians on the field at all times. I would say that the number should be four. And then you've got an equitable arrangement offensively and defensively. You can't load up your defense with as many as 10 or 11 Americans as some coaches have done. That takes care of the imbalance. It introduces equity. And I think it would create some mismatches and allow the offenses to flourish again. It's a simple solution. You've got a ratio anyway. Just employ it differently. Mandate that there must be four Canadians on the field at all times. And it's easier to monitor, too. You don't get into the vagaries of the situation such as that faced the Hamilton Tiger Cats when they were disciplined by the league for a ratio infraction in the season, meaningless season opener against Hamilton. Chris Jones got dinged for that once when he was in Saskatchewan. And it's easy to see how that can happen when there isn't a strict requirement of there being a certain amount of Canadians on the field at all time. So just make it four. Some may argue three. But whatever it is, have the defense and the offense in the same, give them a level playing field ratio wise. And I think you will then see some situations where you might have more mismatches and a better, more entertaining product. So the answer lies in the ratio. I think to me, it's pretty simple.
I think it is too. And everything you said there, I completely agree with. And I've thought of that too many, many times that, you know, remember when the offensive line changed and we went to a bit more American tackles? Because these Canadian tackles, arguably not all of them, couldn't keep up with these American offensive linemen. So that position kind of came more American.
And we saw that a bit this season.
Oh, especially
this when they used the Canadian tackle.
Wow, I know. Yeah, so I think, and more teams are going that way. Look at Winnipeg, who are their two mainstays. Well, their mainstays on offensive line are all five, but two great American tackles that can deal with any sort of defensive line pressure.
Yeah, they got Hardrick and they got Bryant. Although Hardrick got lit up on one play in the Grey Cup, but that'll happen.
But I agree with you, Rob, and I think that's something to look at. And maybe I sense a column there in your.
Oh yeah, I'm definitely doing that this week. I mentioned that before. Farhan Lalji mentioned it a few weeks ago. I think he was on CJME, CKRM when he talked about this. Dave Dickinson sort of alluded to the same issue. I wrote about this a year or two ago about how the answer is simply, just standardize the amount of Canadians that are on the field. It's so much easier to monitor. Yeah. And then you've got 8-4 versus 8-4. And then let's see how it works. Before you go changing from 3 downs to 4 downs, before you start doing all this radical stuff, doesn't it make more sense just to have an equitable situation, offense versus defense? Why should it be weighted more heavily toward the other? And it doesn't really require a massive change in terms of the philosophy regarding Canadians. You still, the Americans still predominate. You're just evening it out. And I think that would address the imbalance that we're seeing now, where defense tends to trump offense.
And you would also maybe get another Canadian a job in the league too.
Absolutely.
Because you're saying 4-4. I'm assuming 4 on offense, 4 in defense. And
yeah, and even have and mandate there must be 4 in special teams too. You know, there's really no.
Well, I think that one looks after itself pretty well.
No, it kind of looks after itself. I mean, just make sure you got 4 in the field at all times, a minimum. If you want to play 5, go right ahead.
Let's move on. Rob, I think we can't move on without talking about the Grey Cup game.
Yeah.
I know you're a big halftime fan. What did you think of the Arkell, the Arkell show?
I'd never heard of them until they were introduced as a halftime show. But you know what? You know what I like to see? I like to see musicians and musical groups that actually have percussionists and instruments and trombonists. Yeah, I think it's got to be the first trombonist in Grey Cup halftime history since, I don't know, 1938 or something. Yeah. There was none of this electronic garbage. It was musicians playing instruments and creating a lot of energy, especially toward the end. It was really an energetic performance, and one that, even though I'm a musical snob with an absolute preference for jazz at the exclusion of everything else, I like the energy that seemed to be exuded by that performance. And I thought it was cool to see trumpets and trombones. I just wish they were playing some jazz.
I was a little sort of disappointed with the Lumineers aspect of it. I thought that was, why play slower music during a Grey Cup halftime? You want it rocking and live. You don't hear Springsteen playing The River when he's doing the Super Bowl. He played his rock and roll greats. And I love the ending. Give me more fireworks.
That was the only fireworks that there'd been in the Grey Cup toward that point.
I'd give them credit going with a hometown band like that. It's just Canada. Now Canada has some great rock and roll bands. Arkell's, The Trues, I Keep Pumping the Glorious Sons is great. I know it's not your type of music. It's my type of music, and I loved it. So it was a great halftime show. First half, football picked up in the second half, I think. Got a little
more. Oh, absolutely. Exciting. First half was just a quintessential 2021 CFL game.
Yeah.
The second half started looking more like the CFL we like, as did the playoffs in general.
Yeah. I think they're all
good. The playoffs have generally been good. We're generally good.
And, you know, and I also like the fact there was debate after this game, discussions about strategy, discussions about things that happened. Sometimes it just goes right straight to the, you know, why is Winnipeg so great and why did Hamilton lose? But the fact that Tim White gave up that rouge to make it a three-point game was still – and the fact that Michael Shea backed Orlando Steinhauer in his press conference saying he would have done the same thing too. I'm going,
that's just the coach's code, though. You don't malign another coach.
That was a line drive kick, and he would have probably got to the 35-yard line.
Oh, easily, yeah.
Easily, and it would have maybe even further. Like, this is almost a former Olympian. He's got incredible speed. He returned a punt, I think, against Ottawa, or not Ottawa, the week before. He's just an incredible talent, and I really think that was kind of a strange call. I give Mazzoli credit. Did he help his free agency status? You know, comes in off the bench, and what it worked so well for Hamilton. I like the way Hamilton used it. Worked well having Evans and Mazzoli when they were there, and they appeared to be, there's no animosity, there's no quarterback controversy. They understand that's the way they're going to win, and they're going to go ahead. It didn't work out. That was the interesting pick at the end of the game. I liked it because I know it touched 3 different hands. And the defense won the game for the Bombers. And regardless of everything the Bombers did this year, we're going to remember them for a defense. And the defensive play at the end of the game won it for them, which I think was pretty cool, too.
What I didn't understand is that the Tiger Cats are first and goal from the 5, and they ran the ball. And why did they – Speedy Banks scores a touchdown. Why did they not get Speedy Banks the ball near the 5-yard line? They're down there. They've got somebody who, even though he's bordering on 34 – is still their best offensive playmaker.
Yeah.
Why not just get Speedy Banks the ball in space? That's the guy you want to go to. And it's just like they ignored him except for that one touchdown that he scored. The play calling was really curious. They were so close on that last play to Acklin.
Yeah,
the ball just barely got tipped away. But the first down call, as soon as that run goes nowhere, then they've got time for one play. I don't know why they didn't try some different things. Or Mazzoli's a mobile quarterback. Roll him out a bit. Use his mobility. Give him some options. To me, the run right up the middle, that was the least the least productive call they could have made in that situation. They just threw him at this chunk of humanity and suddenly it's second and goal from the five. If you're going to run the ball, at least do so with a bit of imagination as opposed to clunk, clunk up the middle, splat.
Yeah. But how good is Winnipeg, Rob, to win that game, to win the playoffs? Like Zach Claris for what, 5 picks in 2 games off the top of my head? And gets the most outstanding player, Grey Cup MVP. I backed it a little bit. Upon further review, I think there should have been great more consideration given to Sergio Castillo. You know, 5 field goals in those windy conditions, a convert, did everything he possibly could, and maybe he should have received more consideration. But I also know the MVP votings and stuff like that takes place sometimes pretty early, and you're both basing on
other. If it was early, then how did Caleros win? Because his best plays were toward the end of the game. And give him credit. I mean, after the back-to-back interceptions, he regrouped.
Yeah.
He's always been really good at flushing things and staying pretty focused on the task at hand. And he made some really nice throws. There was a touchdown to Dembski. There was what turned out to be the game winner to Darvin Adams. He displayed the arm strength. He displayed the patience in the pocket. He ultimately made the plays when he had to make the plays. And that's what, if he doesn't do that, I think everything else is for naught. So I don't really dispute the legitimacy of Zach Collaros as a Grey Cup MVP. I mean, you look at the West semifinal, and Cody Fajardo threw 4 interceptions. Well, so what? When he had to make plays late in the game, he made them.
Mm-hmm.
And Zach Collaros didn't get picked off 4 times, but he had some situations where he faltered and nonetheless made the plays. And my dog is so cute.
Oh, yeah.
Look at Candy. There's our weekly Candy cameo.
Oh, she's such a shy,
Are you a good girl?
No, boy. Aww. She ever do anything besides sleep?
Oh, she's sleeping. So she's cute. Dozing. I love her so much. You know what she's doing now? She's preventing me from writing.
Oh, good.
If I'm sitting down and I got the computer laptop in my lap, she does not like the fact that she's not getting attention. Well, basically splat herself right in front of between me and the computer and just lie looking at me like, I want attention. I want attention. So I'm surprised she hasn't crashed the podcast already. Cause she's just such a, if she's looking at me and I look at my phone, if my eyes divert from her at all, she puts her paws on my shoulders and pins me down and goes in a face licking frenzy. She's the greatest dog ever, Mer.
That's awesome. Hey, speaking of the greatest ever, I really was impressed.
This April in the Regina Humane Society calendar, available for $10.
Perfect. Hey, I was impressed with TSN's coverage of the Grey Cup this weekend. Lots of
opposition. In-game interview. Those in-game interviews have got to go.
Yeah, but I know you.
But the coverage over. Rod Smith was terrific. Glenn Suter was terrific.
And the features were good.
The images were terrific. They did such a great job. Beginning.
So many cameras. So many camera angles and everything covered and all the stuff and. I love the features and I love covering the walkthroughs. That was such a great idea to watch the walkthroughs and people find out that such a difference in the two walkthroughs that the Blue Bombers are all kind of having fun and hanging out in the Tiger Cats. It was business. But you also knew as soon as the camera's off, O'Shea took them inside and it was all business about getting ready to do all that sort of stuff. But kudos to TSN for its Grey Cup coverage. I guess it's the next best thing to being there. Is getting to watch all the information that TSN trots out. Now let's go quickly over to the Rough Riders. Jeremy O'Day, yeah. He's not really a guy to show his cards very much. He's pretty well always been that way. He's not going to pretty well have the expected answers. They want to get as many guys back as they can.
There wasn't really much to extract from that at all.
He wants to get all his free agents back, which is not going to be possible. I looked through and I searched all the starters from the game from the West final. And I came up with 3 guys coming back for 2020, signed to 22, Cody Fajardo, Dan Clark, and Brandon Labatt. Jeremy pointed out that I wasn't correct. And sometimes when they put out the press release, they don't put how long they've signed for. So you're making some assumptions, but anyway, they just got a long list of free agents. Pretty well anybody you think of is a free agent and that's due to COVID-19. It's due to the one-year contracts. I would think, I don't know how much of the new CBA is going to impact things, but they're going to...
Keon Schaefer-Baker would be under contract for more than 1 year, for example.
Like the rookies would be, because they have to, I think it's true and an option. So kind of like that, but... So, but they still don't
know what they signed. Logan Ferland could be under contract, you know? Yeah.
But I don't know what they signed for the year that wasn't on. It didn't take place. What kind of contract? Was there no contracts in? I guess not. So I guess maybe that's the part was... Because they didn't play football. Like you and I don't count it as a season. Because it didn't.
But that counted as a season contractually. So if you signed a two-year contract in 2020, it's expired now.
Yeah.
But I didn't really get much from the Jeremy O'Day press conference. I didn't expect much to come out of it, and not much did. He did mention that Duke Williams is expressing an interest in returning.
Yeah.
I think that's an encouraging sign. I wouldn't be surprised if that's one of the situations where they've just agreed, okay, we'll work this out. And when the fiscal year or when the calendar changes from 2021 to 2022, we'll just formalize this. I was encouraged, I think, to hear that Shaq Evans is still in their plans. Jeremy O'Day pointed out that it's tough to come back from a broken leg within a season.
We were told it was a broken foot all season too.
Yeah.
Which I know the foot's not that far from the leg, but
part of the leg. Can't have a leg without a foot.
Yeah.
This is the kind of educational basis that we have on this podcast. But what else? Really wasn't much to extract. I asked them about the number two quarterbacking situation. They said that they're very high on Mason Fine. I wonder where that leaves Isaac Harker. Late in the season, he was bumped from number two to number three. That, I think, is telling. I would hope that – I like Isaac Harker. I hope they're not ruling him out of their plans completely, but sometimes actions speak more loudly than words. And when I did ask about the number two quarterbacking situation, Jeremy O'Day referenced Mason Fine but didn't mention Isaac Harker until I followed up with a question about Isaac Harker. So read into that what you may.
That's also yours. Our obsession, even Craig kind of teased me a little bit about the second string quarterback. Which was kind of,
I guess. It's an issue, you know, I mean.
It's an issue, but they have the number one guy locked up for another year, which takes a lot, you know, in Cody Fajardo. And I think you said a few good things about him in the past.
In the future,
a little bit of bromance going there, you and Cody, I think. But,
yeah, and congratulations to Cody Fajardo for winning the Gord Barwell Award. Yeah. Which goes to a CFL player who exemplifies laudable behavior and Christian values on and off the field. And I can't think of a worthier recipient of that than Cody Fajardo.
Yeah, and it was such a different thing. And I know that was the first time we've seen Jeremy in person. I've seen him at practice since 19, maybe. It's kind of nice to be in person with the guys again and kind of put this, because they're back to normal protocols now, masks and that kind of thing. So it's a little.
I don't want to do any more Zoom sessions. I'm so old for Zoom.
But tune into our podcast.
Yeah, that's on YouTube. That's not Zoom.
Zoom calls made it very difficult. But I'm glad they opened things up in the playoffs. So that's part of the protocols easing because things are getting better. We're going to see what's happening.
Maybe things are getting better. Look at the COVID numbers in the National Hockey League, NBA, NFL.
And does CFL ever get fortuitous in its timing of the Grey Cup? Because they could have been, imagine if that was now in the way this latest variant's running through teams. They got their season in. They had one big incident with the Elks. Basically, everything. So, and we said kudos, but the players bought in. Everyone bought into what they had to do, except for a couple of them.
Yeah.
And good for them, and they knew what was going on. They wanted to play football. It's also a job, so they needed the money, and that's probably another reason. But I kept thinking, and I mentioned it the other day when you made Cody get quite emotional at that season-ending press conference, and I don't know if I said it to you that time, but I found it just showed how much pressure these guys are under and how much, you know, being tested and being on their own and not being able to go to restaurants and not being able to socialize. Also, Cody does wear his emotions on his sleeve, and I was still surprised, but I also felt, this is the way the season's been for these guys. And it's hard. They've been away from families, and Cody's probably seen his wife twice, you know, since the middle of July. That's so hard on guys. And I think part of it, I'm not saying that I'm not speaking for it, but just my observation might have been deserved how much pressure these guys are under, and it just kind of all overflowed for Cody. And still amazing to see a quarterback do that, and I still find it quite, I don't know.
He's real. He's genuine. He's not going to hide behind a mask, even in these COVID times. He's going to be exactly what he is and exactly who he is. And may that never change.
Yeah. So what we're going to be quiet for the next little while. What do you anticipate? Do you anticipate a normal season? Can we sort of do that in 2020?
Well, Omicron. Normal, who
knows? We have a Grey Cup at the end, too, which also makes
sense. Grey Cup is scheduled for November 20th. Here's hoping that happens. Honestly, we're dealing with a potential fifth wave. Who's to say there won't be a sixth or a seventh? I can't even look at the sporting landscape right now and be sure that the NHL, NBA, or NFL won't be facing a hiatus or two in the weeks ahead. Now, NHL participation in the Olympics is being imperiled as a result of this, whereas I think a few weeks ago, I think it was taken for granted that most players would go. But we're dealing with, I think, without trying to sound like an epidemiologist, I mean, this Omicron variant is infinitely, you know, exponentially more transmissible than say Delta. So where does all this go, especially as we're getting close to the holiday season and people are more inclined to gather? We're doing more indoors. What could January be like? What could February be like? And on and on, we keep kicking the can down the road until there's a sufficient eradication of this, not only in countries and on continents where vaccination is more prevalent, until some of the less vaccinated countries in the world can deal with that. This thing is not going away. This season was a bonus. I hope we have an 18-game season, a full season next year. I hope everything is normal. But honestly, how could you even bet on what the world is going to be like a week from now?
I got my booster last week, so I've been triple vax now. But I have to admit, it was a tough weekend. I had some reactions to it. And I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that as an observation. I'm not saying just because I
have. I mean, your hair fell out. Sorry.
God. Anyway, it felt like.
I'm laughing at my own jokes.
I kept thinking to myself, I felt hungover, which I usually do at Grey Cups, but I hadn't drank during the weekend because I wasn't there. So I just felt this sort of, but don't ever let that be an excuse. Like, I give the Saskatchewan Health Authority, I went and got my boost. I was 45 minutes in and out. The people there are so pleasant. They carry on a conversation. There's therapy dogs. There's pictures of kids that have drawn things inspirational.
Aren't those amazing? I went to the one at the old Costco, and there were drawings everywhere.
And there's all these little sort of stick-em notes. The only thing missing was the hot dogs. Man, if they had a hot dog stand there, I don't know how many times. That's, for Costco regulars, the hot dogs was like a deal. It's $1.50 for hot dogs. And it was just a great reason to go to Costco. But, yeah, and I give them a lot of credit. And it is... And the shot doesn't hurt. That's what I would say.
The flu shot hurt. The flu shot really hurt. The COVID shot was just,
Yeah. So, Griffin, just please, everyone, I know we can't get vaccinated. Just look at the numbers. Vaccinations work. We know what they do. Just go out there and do your part. And I'm so looking forward to it. I know we're going to cover it. Last Christmas, we got together outdoors on Christmas Eve. The family was all at Douglas Park. We all had hot chocolate. We walked around. And then we all retired to our separate places for dinners and stuff. And it was different. It gave the kids my children an opportunity to maybe develop some other traditions. But, man, I'm looking forward to them all being together this Christmas, because there's nothing better than Christmas Eve in the McCormick household.
Our tradition was certainly disrupted last year. Every Christmas since 1984, we've gone over to the – or I, and then we, gone over to the home of Dr. Mark Anderson, his wife, Roxanne, the sons, Eric and Paul, dog, Portia, once upon a time, Fritz. and we weren't able to do that last year. And, we improvised, and I had a nice pizza. And on Christmas night, I dragged out my old skates, and I went for a skate at the Lakeview Outdoor Rink, where I had not been since 1984. But this year on December 24th, I can hardly wait to go over to the Andersons for Christmas. And blow away my diabetes diet and have too many chicken balls. And we're going to take our wonderful dog Candy over there, and we're going to have our first Candy Christmas. So
that would be awesome.
And then even this Sunday, I'm going over there. I'm going to watch NFL all day with my godson, Eric. So it's nice to be able to do those things. Don't take them for granted, because only a year ago, you could do it, but you better not get caught. So I hope everybody has the type of Christmas that I'm looking forward to. I hope I have the type of Christmas that I'm looking forward to. And I extend those good wishes to all of you out there in podcast land who have been so kind to bear with us through 49 minutes and 24 seconds of this blather.
Most of which
hasn't been about my dog, but I tried to sneak her in.
And most of it hasn't been about anything new, but we're glad to be. Rob, we'll probably talk again, but Merry Christmas. And let's outro this baby in a fine form for you.
Yeah, Merry Christmas to everybody. Merry Christmas to you.
Yes, my favorite pun.
And now for the outro. If you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review and a 5-star rating. It helps us grow the podcast. You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. I get them on Apple, I think. If you'd like to send us a question, you can email me, that's Rob, at rvanstone@postmedia.com, and we'll read it on the show. And I should note, we've had a question as recently as October, so keep them coming. It's really hard to deal with the flood of questions we are receiving. You can follow me at Rob Vanstone on Twitter. And Murray is on Twitter at Murray LP, at MURRAYLP. So that is the outro that I am legally bound to recite.
All right.
For at Murray LP, I'm at Rob Vanstone. On behalf of the beautiful Candy, thanks for your time. Merry Christmas, all the best, the new year. We may talk to you before then, but if we don't, stay safe, stay healthy, and thank you for all your time this year. Take care.